Тлай хоос мучи сатма. Сакит ат чи салук кавашим. Welcome everyone. It's the fourth day of our course, and today we're gonna finish with our detailed look at every type of sound in Nuchano. The topic for today will be glottalized consonants. There are two kinds of glottalized consonants, plosives and resonants. If you look at the alphabet chart on the alphabet summary handout, you'll see that there are three main kinds of consonants in Nuchano: plosives, spirants, and resonants. However, only plosives and resonants can be glottalized. Another way to put that is that there is a glottalization contrast on plosives and resonants in Nuchano, but there is no glottalization contrast in spirant consonants, or in vowels, for that matter. So the only kinds of consonants that are glottalized in Nuchano are plosives and resonants. Furthermore, plosives and resonants are glottalized differently because they're different kinds of sounds. Let's talk first about what glottalization is. Glottalization means that a sound has a glottal gesture in addition to whatever other gestures it consists of. So P, for example, involves a gesture at the lips. The lips come together and then they come apart. Glottalized P has all that plus a glottal gesture. That is something that happens at the glottis, the space between the vocal cords. What that glottalization gesture is can vary somewhat across different types of sounds, across different languages, and even across different speakers or different styles of speech, right? So people can speak more slowly and carefully sometimes, more quickly and less carefully and sloppily other times, and that can have an effect on how glottalization is realized. So generally speaking, glottalization is some glottal gesture, but there are more details and variation to how that's realized. To put it very briefly, glottalized plosives are ejective, and glottalized resonants are pre-glottalized. That is a boiled-down version of most of what you need to know about glottalization in Nuchano. Glottalized plosives are ejective, glottalized resonants are pre-glottalized. Okay, what does that mean? That's what I'll be telling you for the next few minutes. Can someone tell me how plosives, spirants, and resonants are defined? What makes them different from each other? What makes a plosive, a spirant, and a resonant? This is a technical question. Can anyone answer it? So we just had a brief definition of the three types of sounds. Plosives have a puff of air. Spirants are continuous sounds, and resonants are singable. That's all correct. We can say furthermore that both spirants and resonants are continuous sounds, whereas only plosives stop the flow of air. Also, plosives aren't the only ones with. I think I wanted to say that plosives are the only sounds with a release, and that goes along with the fact that they have a moment of silence. Even though spirants and resonants are both continuous sounds, as Mariah said, resonants are singable sounds. Another way to say that is that they're made with voice, that is, with vibrating vocal cords, whereas spirants are not. So spirants are quiet, whispery, hissy sounds, not voiced, whereas resonants are voiced. That's the main difference between these three types of sounds. How are plosives glottalized? Well, plosives have this thing we call a release, right? There's a moment of silence, or closure, and then a moment of release, where the air is released in a puff of breath. And that moment of release is the moment where they get glottalized. So if it's a glottalized consonant, a glottalized plosive, that is, the release is stronger than if the sound were not glottalized. Let me pronounce a few of these for you, and then I'll get into a little more detail. So if we read across the first row of the consonant chart, those sounds are p, t, t, s, ch, k, qua, ka, qua. And every one of those sounds has a moment of closure followed by a moment of release. When they're glottalized, they sound like this. P, t, ta, 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 cha, ka, qua, ah, ah. Those last two are the pharyngeal stop and the glottal stop, which are not glottalized in exactly the same way as the other sounds, and we'll get to those in a bit. For now, let's talk about sounds like P, T, lambda, C, C wedge, and K that have both a plain version and a glottalized version. The plain and glottalized versions both have the closure and the release, but the glottalized consonants have a stronger release. How am I making that stronger release? What I'm doing is, during that brief moment of closure, I'm closing the part of my mouth that makes the consonant, like the lips for P or the tongue tip for T, but I'm also closing my glottis, closing my vocal cords. Then what I have is a trapped space of air between wherever the oral closure is and the glottis, right? That air is trapped for a few milliseconds. Then I flex my voice box, my larynx, like this. You can move it. And when you flex your larynx like that, you decrease the size of the space and increase the air pressure. So that when you release the oral closure, there's a small explosion, right? And plosives always have a small explosion, but the small explosion that you get after compressing the air through that glottal gesture is stronger. So it's that compression of air by trapping air in the mouth using an oral closure and a glottal closure at the same time that gives the release of the glottalized plosives that extra strength. Now, excuse me. Now, here's something interesting. Because of the way glottalized plosives are made, they actually don't require air from the lungs. So most sounds are made while we're exhaling, right? We exhale as we speak. Without air, constant air from the lungs, we wouldn't be able to speak. But glottalized plosives do not require air from the lungs. All they require is the air that's already in the mouth, in the vocal tract. So one way to learn to do this, to glottalize plosives, is to purposefully not exhale and just use the air that you already have in your vocal tract. For example, I'm going to not exhale for a few seconds, but I'm going to say these glottalized plosives. I'll do it again. So when I just did that, I was only using my mouth to hold air, compress it, and then release it. and this, I think, is the main difficulty for people who come from a language like English that doesn't use glottalization on consonants to a language like Nunchaknuth that does, is learning to use only an oral airstream as opposed to a pulmonic airstream, right? English is a language that strictly has a pulmonic airstream. That means all of our sounds are made while exhaling from the lungs. And so it can be strange. It feels weird to pronounce consonants that do not require exhalation. What I'd like to do next is go through all of our example words for glottalized plosives and compare them to the corresponding plain plosive to see if we can make that contrast. For example, the example word for plain K is kook, kook, and the example word for hard K is kn, kn. So I want to see which of you are able to make that contrast between the first sound of kook and the first sound of kn. I'll start by pronouncing them all myself, and then we'll take turns. Let's start with the C's, plain C, hard C. Tsapin. Tsawak. Plain C wedge, hard C wedge. Chukup, chaputs. Plain K, glottalized K. Kook, kn. Now the round K's. Quistup, quis. Now the lambdas. Tlama, tlisuk. Now the P's, pawats, papi. And now the T's, tupkuk, tatus. Something that several of you asked about was vowels. How do I pronounce a vowel after a glottalized plosive? Like ta, qui. And this is a significant question because vowels always involve air from the lungs. They involve a pulmonic airstream. Whereas, as we've seen, glottalized plosives do not require air from the lungs. All of the airstream comes from the mouth. So when you transition from a glottalized consonant into a vowel, you're transitioning from one type of airstream to another. It's a complex, it involves complex timing. But in answer to the question, is there still a vowel after a glottalized consonant? The answer is definitely yes. The vowel is still there. It's just that we've thrown a glottalization gesture into the mix on top of everything else. Something else I mentioned is that when people glottalize very strongly and clearly, you often hear the glottal gesture as an extra drum beat in the pronunciation of the word. So take the first syllable of pawats, pawats. We have a P released into an ah, pa, pa. And there's only one consonant release in there, pa. But now take the first syllable of p-up-e, p-up-e. When people pronounce it very strongly and slowly, there's actually two releases. We hear the lips release first, and a few milliseconds after that, we hear the glottis open, and then the vowel begins. So has an extra release, an extra drum beat in it, and that is the glottal gesture. So a vowel is a vowel is a vowel. It is not, it doesn't stop being a vowel just because it's pronounced next to a glottalized consonant, but the glottalization introduces an extra gesture. Let me say something about the glottal stop and the pharyngeal stop. Are these glottalized plosives? Yes and no. The glottal stop is, in a way, pure glottalization. That's all it is. It is a simple glottal gesture. It's a closing and an opening of the vocal cords. That's all the glottal stop is. So it's not a glottalized consonant in the same way as these other consonants, because these other consonants put glottalization on top of something else, right? Whereas glottal stop, that's all it is glottalization. So in one sense, it's not a glottalized consonant. In another sense, it's a pure glottalized consonant. So it's a matter of definition. As for the pharyngeal stop, this is not, technically speaking, a glottalized consonant. The pharyngeal stop, the main gesture of the pharyngeal stop is the tightening of the tongue root, the bunching of the tongue root. And that's all it requires to make a pharyngeal stop. So there's actually no glottalization required to make a pharyngeal stop. The thing is, there's often a glottal gesture at the same time as the pharyngeal tightening. So the pharyngeal stop kind of optionally has a glottal stop laid on top of it, but that is an optional part of the pronunciation of the pharyngeal stop. So technically speaking, the pharyngeal stop is not a glottalized consonant. But why then do we put them in the same row of the chart as the hard P, T, C, and so on? It's mainly because otherwise we'd have to add another row to the chart. It's neater to just put them in the same row. Also, they behave similarly. So one of the restrictions in Nuchonal on orders, just the simple order of consonants and vowels in words, is that glottalized consonants are allowed only at the beginning of syllables. If you look at every Nuchonal word, in most dialects now, there are dialects that break this rule, but in the dialect we're studying, glottalized consonants occur only at the beginnings of syllables. Consonants at the ends of syllables are always plain, without exception. There's no such thing as a glottalized consonant at the end of a syllable in the dialect that we're studying. And glottal stop and pharyngeal stop follow that same pattern. They appear only at the beginnings of syllables, never at the ends of syllables. So even though they're not phonetically glottalized consonants, phonologically they behave a lot like glottalized consonants. So that's another reason why we write them in the same row. I'll also point out this interesting fact about the pharyngeal stop. You might notice that there are no glottalized Q's in our Nuchonal chart. In fact, the glottalized Q does occur in Nuchanal. It's just very rare. It's mostly not present. And the reason is, some generations ago, all glottalized Qs became pharyngeal stops in Nuchanal. That's a sound change that happened in Nuchanal. Its sister language, Macaw, preserves all those glottalized Qs. An example is the word for dog. The Nuchanal word for dog is Ainik. Ainik. It starts with a pharyngeal stop. Ainik. The Macaw word is Kredik. Kredik. It starts with a glottalized Q. And the glottalized Q is actually the original sound. So in this case, it's Nuchanal that has developed a new sound, the pharyngeal stop. And that's one of the reasons why pharyngeal stop behaves like a glottalized consonant, because many generations ago, it was a glottalized consonant. It was a glottalized Q. Understanding that will also help us understand some important sound changes that happen in the modern language. So when a Q should be glottalized in Nuchanal, it often becomes a pharyngeal stop. And this seems strange unless you know the historical story for where the pharyngeal stops came from. Chooch, that's our introduction to glottalized plosives. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about glottalized resonance. Glottalized plosives are not unusual in the languages of the world. There's quite a lot of languages. I forget the numbers that I've heard, but I believe it's between 20 and 40% of the world's languages have glottalized plosives. It's a pretty common type of sound. Glottalized resonants, on the other hand, are quite rare. The number of languages in the world that have glottalized resonance is more like 5%. So this makes Nuchanal and other languages of the Pacific Northwest quite unusual and interesting. This is one of the unusual things about Nuchanal, that it has glottalized resonance. As we were talking about before, resonants are continuous sounds. They do not have a stoppage of air. They do not have a closure. So there's no release to make more strong. So obviously they can't be glottalized in the same way that plosives are glottalized. So how are they glottalized? And the answer is that they are pre-glottalized. What that means is there's a glottal stop pronounced just before the main part of the resonant. In the chat, I've put the way linguists would write more precisely the difference between the way glottalized plosives are pronounced and the way glottalized resonants are pronounced. I've listed these sounds in slash brackets and square brackets. Linguists use slash brackets for phonological representations, that is, the way sounds are organized in the mind of a fluent speaker. And linguists use square brackets for phonetic representations, the way sounds are actually pronounced in the world. And when we write glottalized consonants in Nuchanal, we write them with a comma directly above the letter, right? I call that the hard sign, or the comma above. It's written directly above the letter. This obscures the fact that the glottalization of plosives comes after the main part of the plosive, whereas the glottalization of resonance comes before the main part of the plosive. This is a timing issue, and also it has to do with the fact that there's no release in resonance. The symbol for ejectivity is an apostrophe after the sound. So that apostrophe after the letter, after P, T, lambda, C, C wedge, K, that apostrophe after in the phonetic representations in square brackets represents the ejectivity, the ejective release. That's the plosive release that's made stronger by glottalization. Whereas, excuse me, in the phonetic representation of the glottalized resonance, you'll see a tiny raised glottal stop before the letter, right? That represents the fact that glottalized m, n, w, y have a glottal closure just before the main part of the sound. To put it in briefer terms, glottalized plosives are post-glottalized or ejective, but glottalized resonants are pre-glottalized. I think you'll find that learning to pronounce glottalized resonance is a lot easier than learning to pronounce glottalized plosives, because to pronounce glottalized plosives, we have to learn a new skill, which is ejectivity. Whereas I think you all already know how to pronounce glottal stop. and that's all you need to add to pronounce the glottalized resonant. The difficult part is first accepting that that's a language sound and disciplining yourself to actually pronounce it. It's common for people with strong English accents to get lazy and not glottalize consonants when they should. Let's pronounce some example words so you can hear the difference between the contrast between a plain resonant and a glottalized resonant. The resonant consonants of Newchanoth are M, N, W, and Y. Another thing that makes Newchanoth unusual is it has no R or L sound. Almost every language in the world has either an R or an L or both. The R and the L form a class of sounds that linguists call liquids. So it's very rare for a language not to have any liquids, but Newchanoth is one of those languages. It has neither an R nor an L. So when it borrows words from other languages that have R or L, usually they get turned into another sound that Newchanoth does have, like N or Y or W. First, I'll say just the sounds by themselves. So the plain resonants sound like M, N, W, Y. The glottalized resonants sound like M, N, W, Y. So there's just a very brief glottal closure just before the sound. M, N, W, Y. This is a lot easier to hear between vowels, which is why in the example words for glottalized resonants, I've chosen words that have these sounds between vowels. So let's compare the example word for plain M to the example word for hard M. Ma-mati, ma-mirso. Ma-mati, ma-mirso. What you should be able to hear is that in ma-mati, there is continuous flow of breath up until the T, which has a brief moment of silence. Ma-mati, ma-mati. So constant flow of air. Whereas in ma-mirso, ma-mirso, the breath stops very briefly at the beginning of each glottalized M. Ma-mirso. And you should be able to hear that in these other words as well. Nunuk hu-ni. Wi'ak su'wa. Yacha si'ya. Although you're all finding the glottalized resonance easy to pronounce and hear in these particular words, ma, mirsu, hu, ni, su, wa, si, ya, that's mainly because they're between vowels. That makes them easier to pronounce and to hear. When glottalized resonants are at the beginnings of words, they're much harder to hear. For example, the word for shy is wa'ak, wa'ak, and it starts with a glottalized W, wa'ak. The word for seeing is natsa. Natsa starts with a glottalized N. The word for also, as you know, is yuqua, yuqua, which starts with a glottalized Y. I think you English speakers would probably agree with me that it's a lot harder to hear the glottalization on those sounds. But with practice, you will start to hear it. Some of you are still struggling to learn to pronounce plosives. Glottalized plosives. And that will take time, but I think you'll have an aha moment where you finally get it, and after that, you'll be able to do it every time. The next hard step, as I've mentioned, is learning to pronounce that with vowels following them, then learning to pronounce words that have both glottalized and plain sounds in the same word, which requires some fine timing that takes time to develop. That is the end of our close look at every type of sound in the Newchanoth alphabet. We started with the vowels and the common consonants, then we went on to tongue tip sounds, C's, S's, and L's. Then we looked at back of the tongue sounds, throat sounds, and last, glottalized sounds. And this is, I'm not going to be lecturing after this on sound alone, just only when it comes up, when it's important to something else. So from now on in this course, we're going to be concerned not so much with pronunciation, but with putting words and sentences together and actually communicating. But anytime I notice that your pronunciation isn't good enough for us to understand what you're saying, or you're missing something important in someone else's pronunciation, I'll bring it up, of course. Are there any questions, other questions at this point about any aspect of the alphabet and the, or the sound system of Nechanov. We're looking at part four of the survival conversation, which is called Elders. The reason this is called Elders is that the sentences in this section are what I usually call lifelines. They're sentences to help you out when you don't know what to say. Like, there's something you want to say, but you don't know how to say it. Or you know a word, but you've momentarily forgotten it. Or someone just spoke and you didn't catch what they said, so you want them to repeat themselves. Maybe you want to try saying a new word that you just learned, and you want to know if you're saying it right. That's what these sentences are for. And the reason the section is called Elders is that we thought, well, these are the kind of things you need to know when you're trying to speak only Nechanov to fluent elders. Conversation 16 asks how a concept is said. Let's take I suggest that when you practice this, you agree on a word that you all already know in both English and Nechanov. And since we're working right now on classroom objects, paper, pen, box, drinking cup, phone, those are good words to use. So let's start with the easiest one, paper, which is called pronounced pipa in Nechanov. That's what we're going to fill in the blank with here. I'm going to demonstrate all five of these conversations, and then you're going to start practicing them in your groups. Let's start with 16A. A'ako atha'atha paper. Wa atma'atha pipa. These sentences, by the way, in 16A and 16B, are some of the most complex in the entire survival conversations. But that's going to help you later on, because once you have this sentence memorized, we're going to use it to help us learn some of the grammatical patterns that it's relying on. 17. Huas iwa. Huas aktahwa. Notice that the S of huas has a glottal stop after it in huas I and huas aktah. That glottal stop is important. Don't neglect to pronounce it. 18. Klul klulse I tsik tsik. Chu klul klulak tlah tsik tsik. Compare 17b and 18b. Both of these have the endings aktlah, which mean I will. Huas aktlah, I will again. Klul klul aktlah, I will slowly. But whereas huas aktlah has a glottal stop at the beginning of aktlah, klul klul aktlah does not. That is not an accident. That is exactly how these words should be pronounced. And if you like, we can go into more detail later about why that is. But again, I'm drawing your attention to when there's a glottal stop and when there isn't. Pronouncing glottal stops or not is an important part of pronouncing your Nechanov properly. 19. Upschik has. Upschik it's. Na na ahak wa wais. Wiwik apamah wa waik. The sentences in conversation 20 are interesting because they are just about the only sentences in the survival conversations that consist of two clauses. We'll be talking later about the difference between a clause and a sentence, but basically a sentence is everything until you reach a period, whereas a clause is a smaller unit. So long, complex sentences consist of many clauses. Simple sentences are simply one clause. And 20a, nana ahakwa wais, is two clauses. So what I'm saying is a clause, and do you understand is a clause. And so this is a complex expression that uses two clauses. And as I pointed out before, in Nechanov, a clause is not complete until it has a mood ending. Since we have two clauses in the sentence, there are also two mood endings. What are the two mood endings in 20A? Nana'ahakwa wa'is. You've probably started to notice that sometimes the same word can have either an A or an E sound. For example, yuqua hak chachemhe versus yuqua i'afla, right? The same word is in both of those sentences, yuqua, but sometimes it has an A, yuqua, sometimes it has an E, yuqua I. Another example is klu thak tlah, klu se'i. What we're seeing here is what's technically called umlaut. Umlaut is when one vowel in a word affects an earlier vowel in a word. So basically, a vowel changes its quality in order to become closer to a later vowel. That's what umlaut is. And umlaut is a German word because it's a very common process in German. And it's also a process in Neuchâtel. Neuchâtel umlaut sounds quite different from German umlaut, but at its heart, it's the same type of thing. It's a later vowel affecting an earlier vowel. The main place we get umlaut in Neuchâtel is when an A is separated from a following I only by a glottal stop. So that's what happens when we get yuqua yuqua'i. The word yuqua naturally has a long A, yuqua. But when we add the ending e to it, all of a sudden we create the environment for umlaut to happen. And what happens is the A assimilates a little bit to the I by becoming an E. It might help to think about this in terms of what I call the vowel triangle. The vowel triangle is a rough approximation of where in the mouth these different vowels are made. And the important thing is that E is halfway between I and A. So when A becomes E, it's becoming a little more like I. And this happens because glottal stop is such a weak consonant that it's in a way transparent to vowel quality. Whereas most consonants, if you get a consonant between two vowels, that consonant's like a wall. The vowels can't see each other. But the glottal stop is kind of like a window. The vowels can see each other. And as a result, they try to get more like each other. And when an A and an I come together, the I wins. The A tries to get more like the I by becoming an E. So that's where we get alternations like yuqua, yuqua'i, plus plusa, plus plusa'i. Take the word ke in, which means crow. If we pronounce the syllable ka by itself, it would be a long A, ka. But we add that into it, it becomes ke in. And actually, this is a feature specifically of Barkley sound Neuchâtel. So one of the things that makes Barkley sound Neuchâtel sound different from other dialects is that it has more umlaut. So where Barkley sound speakers say k-in for crow, central speakers say ka-in. Where Barkley speakers say we-ich, meaning sleeping, central speakers say wa-ich. So this is part of the Barkley sound accent. Basically, the Barkley sound Neuchâtel does more umlaut than other dialects do. We also have e's, long e's, in places that do not result from umlaut. So we have words like nan, which means, oh, grandma, and epinus, which means apple. And here we get a long e not because of umlaut, but just because it's a long e. It's naturally a long e. But most e's in Neuchâtel result from umlaut. So you'll have to get used to, at the beginning, you'll have to remind yourself to apply that alternation. Yuqua, yuqua'i. Klus, klusa, klus, klusa'i. After a while, it'll just become second nature. You won't have to think about it. Because this is a natural process. The language does this because it makes the vowels easier to pronounce. And so it's not difficult to learn. It's natural. Here is one rendition of Sea Cucumber Daughter. Quats aset we'en haquat te in wakas. Cheek sat awe'en. Utsachi at kista. Lululululu wawa at. Chu. So in this story, Sea Cucumber Daughter is introduced, and then she goes to the potty and she sings this song while she's on the toilet. And usually, it's when she says lulululu, everyone laughs. That's in my storytelling notation. I've broken this word up into its meaningful parts, which are kutzach, meaning beautiful, mit, meaning past tense, and ma, meaning, which is a real mood ending. But when they get pronounced together, they are pronounced kutzachita. In other words, some contraction has happened. The past tense mit has an M that is sometimes pronounced and sometimes not. In this word, it is not pronounced. The mood ending ma has an M that is almost always pronounced, except after the past tense ending mit. And that's why there's no M in kutzachita. In fact, there are speakers who say kutzachitma. That's not unusual. So some people say kutzachitma. Some people say kutzachita. So some have more contraction, some have less contraction. I consider the contracted pronunciation the more conservative one, so that's the one that I use myself. But it's not wrong to say kutzachitma. So it's personal choice. I advise you to pick one and stick with it. So when we're learning to say this, I find it very useful to do an exercise that I call word building, where I start with the root or stem of a word, and then I add one ending at a time. And what this exercise does is it takes a complicated thing, spitting out a long complex word, and breaks it into several smaller steps, taking something we already know and adding just one little thing to it. And this is one of the most helpful exercises I've found in my language learning for learning how to say long, complex words. I practice breaking it down into smaller steps, and I teach my brain to do that really fast, which is what you have to do when you speak in fluent speak. So let's practice building this word. Kutzach. Kutzachit. Kutzachita. Now let's build it again, but with the hearsay mood. Kutzach. Kutzachit. Kutzachitwein. The capital M in my storytelling notation represents mood. So you should replace that with a mood ending. And I started doing this, writing a capital M instead of an actual mood ending, for a couple of reasons. One is that often we have a choice of mood. So we could choose to tell the story in the real mood, as if we actually had witnessed it, or we could choose to tell it in the hearsay mood, which is the more appropriate mood. But they both kind of work. So that M represents that moment of choice where you have to pick the right mood for the job. Also, it forces the learner to do a little more work. Some learners get lazy and they just read what they see instead of thinking about it and trying to understand it. So when I write an M, that forces you to make the decisions about what mood to use and demonstrate that you understand which mood is the best one to use in different situations, and also that you know the different forms of the mood, whatever mood you're using. In my storytelling notation for Otsachiak, you'll see that the ending uk is written with an exclamation point before it. That means that it's a hardening ending. It tries to harden the preceding sound if it can. And there's an interesting kind of contraction that happens in this word, which is that when we take the word otsachik, which ends in a barred lambda, and we add ut to it, we get otsachiak. So the lambda of otsachik disappears. The hardening is pronounced as a glottal stop. And this new lambda is part of the ending ut, not the original lambda from otsachik. And then we can add our mood ending, utsachiat we'in, or utsachiat ma. Let's build this word, utsachit, utsachiat, utsachiat ma. Utsachiat ma means she went to. Utsachit means go to. Utsachiat means then went to. Utsachiat ma, then she went to. And each one of these is a word that you're going to want to use many, many times. So this word building exercise is helping us practice multiple skills all at once and gradually building our fluency. So what I would like you to work on over the weekend is familiarize yourself with the story and see if you can tell it. If you come to our Uclulit evening class tonight, you're going to hear several intermediate and advanced learners telling this story. Each in a different version. So I also encourage people to, once as soon as they understand a story, to start changing it and tell it a little differently each time, because that's a very useful skill. It shows you haven't just memorized a bunch of sounds, but rather you understand what the words and sentences mean, and you're able to adapt them to a particular storytelling situation.